This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Horvat gets it free to Mayfield at the line. Long shot deflected. He scores. It bounced off JT Miller. Completely changed direction. Lankinen didn't have a chance. Mayfield scores 14 seconds into the second period. Held in by Chalosky left point. Comes around to Hutton again on the right wing. Severing pass in front. And they score. Holmstrom threw it to the net. Lankinen made the initial save, and Engvall digs home the rebound. The Islanders score twice in the first 2 minutes and 10 seconds of the second period to take a 3-1 lead.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Horvat back the other way for the Islanders. Carries into the Vancouver zone. Driving to the net. Backhand pass in front. They score. Anders Lee all alone in front. Beats Kevin Lankinen stick side off the setup from the former Canuck captain, Bo Horvat. And it's 4-1 New York.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks get crushed on home ice 5-2 by the Islanders, and the scoreline probably flatters the Canucks, losing only by 3 on the scoreboard. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We are going to bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation in just a moment. Grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free 1-888-275-0650. You can also get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. It's been such a mixed bag start to this season for the Canucks. Record-wise, they've been fine. Coming into the game, they're on pace for 111 points. They lose tonight, still on pace for over 100 points on the season, early on or whatever. But they haven't really been convincing. They've had some good moments, of course. They've had a good performance, followed by bad performance. And tonight, considering that really there's no excuse. Like, there's no back-to-backs. You've been on home ice for a few days. They've had some rest. They've had practices. They have played some of the fewest games in the NHL so far. This type of effort tonight, to me, is unacceptable. Like, there is no way I can explain or justify, well, they didn't have it tonight. Do you want to make the excuse that they were too happy because Dakota Joshua came back? Like, I don't understand why this was such a lackluster effort here tonight.
Randy, I would add one more thing as well. I would say, remember, you're playing against a pretty banged-up team, right?
Third game in four nights,
a team that has had a tough situation with their star player out of the lineup, some of their best defensemen out of the lineup. So from a – and they also got the first goal of the game, first time in eight games that they're able to get that first goal, and it really fell off right after that, Sat. So in terms of excuses, and I thought JT Miller with Bick and Jamie was very direct in saying no urgency, and you – not sure where the message was falling flat in terms of the guys. JT was kind of asking that question himself in that conversation with you guys, but that didn't pick up in the second period. If anything, when it was 3-1, to start off the third period just a little bit, you saw some, there was no finish, and then they took a step back again. So, yeah, really lack of urgency was the big thing in this game, guys, which is you got to be cutthroat in this game, right? You got a team that's banged up. You got a team that's tired. Take advantage, then, didn't it?
Yeah, you referenced the interview. We'll play that clip later on in the postgame show. But like the real-time recognition and self-awareness of that, was it echoed to the room? Was it unaware that they are having a significant lack of urgency through this? And that was in the first intermission.
Yeah.
The second intermission, they responded with two shots. They got added a third one later on. It was exactly the same as the first period. And, you know, I'm more aggrieved than I was after other nights because this is now sequential games here that we've seen this year, 3 and 4 home games.
Well, even the Devils game, Big, like for the first period, it was 1-0. There wasn't much going on. It kind of fell apart later in the game. It wasn't horrible to start that game. This game was like bad to start to finish.
It'd be one thing, again, if it happens once every 6 weeks and we say, hey, look, long season, all well and good. These things happen. Can move on. This is three times in now 2.5 weeks here. It was October 30th was that game.
And, boys, it was three things, right? We talked about the shots, which you mentioned. The puck possession was not there either. And also, what comes from effort? Penalties.
Yeah.
And they were not able to – you know, the skating wasn't there, the effort, the forecheck. Very easy for the Islanders to move up through the neutral zone. Like, there was transition attack after transition attack at certain points. And – it was when you're not able to generate A through the forecheck, you got to make sure that neutral zone is, as Rick Tocchet says, you're able to, like, you know, basically to suffocate them a little bit or at the very much, you know, squash the play. And they weren't able to do that at all tonight. So, and that comes from effort. The baseline is you got to bring that effort. You got to bring that urgency. And unfortunately, they weren't able to bring it tonight.
I wish it was one thing that we could say, oh, look, they were a little bit of a, you know, disconnected in the D zone, or they struggled in, you know, moving the puck. It was a little bit of everything.
The biggest thing for me is you just got outworked.
Yeah.
I can handle sometimes, hey, you don't have a clean game, mistakes happen, you know, things don't go your way or whatever, but this was like, this did not meet the standard level of effort that's required to not only, you know, be a good team, but to show up on a night in front of your home fans. Like, I don't care if you're a good team or not. This is not the way you show up for your home fans. And fans have every right to be frustrated. They've seen, what, two wins on home ice so far this season? They've seen bad efforts on home ice. Like, you can't be treating your fans to performances like this when they come and spend their time and their money to watch their favorite team play. You have to give them something. And to show up and like, not give your fans anything for the majority of a game, that's a tough look. That should not be acceptable.
Yeah, and on that power play goal that really got everything started for New York was, you know, another play, right, where that blue paint, it was just really easy, and Tyler Myers is kind of stuck in no man's land. He can't get the puck, and boom, Pajot has an easy, you know, chance to deposit that into the net. And that was really it, where the Islanders gained confidence. This is one of the worst power plays in the NHL. They're 31st in the NHL, they're 30th on the road. And when they get that boost of confidence of saying, hey, if we work hard, we can take these guys. And that power play goal summed it up, where you attack the blue paint, they don't respond. And the Islanders really got a lot of momentum from that.
I'll bring up the special teams as well, because you referenced no penalties drawn.
Yep.
Well, one, obviously really late.
Pedersen, yeah.
But this is a egregiously bad penalty kill, too. They're operating at like 64%. So if you push the tempo a little bit, draw some penalties.
Worst combined power play and PK.
Yeah. Like, I think it adds up to like 75, 76%.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you work a little hard, you draw some penalties, your edge is going to be on the power play. I know Canucks' power play isn't firing at all cylinders. It's going to be a lot easier against this team. They didn't even get on the power play tonight until right at the very end.
Yeah, and it's garbage time, essentially.
Yeah.
You get a garbage time
game's
power
over
play.
At that stage.
And I know fans got frustrated. They were taking their frustrations out. But, I mean, how many times were there any real missed calls on the Canucks?
There was maybe one on Vinny DeHernay in the second period,
because
it looked very similar to the Lekker-Mackey penalty.
Yeah, you could have probably called that one. It's a bit
that's
of a hole.
Right,
maybe one in the neutral zone with Horvat and Hughes.
That one I didn't mind
as much. That was
50-50,
yeah.
Yeah, that was more 50. But the DeHernay one felt very similar. I can't remember the Islanders player, but it felt very similar to the Lekker-Mackey grab.
But at the same time, when a team, and you know whether you call this bias or not, when a team is really chasing a game and not playing all that great, you're not going to get bailed out and get penalties either. So the officials at that point, you know, and I'm not saying they're being mean to the Canucks, so to speak, but I don't know. I can't even sit here and say that they should have you know, call this or call that, and if the refs had done this, maybe the Canucks would have had energy.
No.
Like, I don't think they did enough to draw penalties tonight.
Well, remember that penalty that was called on Teddy Bluger? That's a classic example of, there's a middle drive by Cizikas, and Bluger's basically put in a situation he's got to make a decision. I can't catch up to this guy, so I have to do something drastic. How many times did the Vancouver Canucks force the issue on that early on in the game, where you're attacking the middle of the ice, you're getting to the blue paint? They weren't. And that Lekker-Mackey goal, you know, congratulations to the kid. It's awesome to see his parents in the building and them have that moment. But that was really that only transition chance that they had.
Yeah.
That was it.
Mm-hmm. And that should have been a moment to spark a catalyst to want to have some energy in the building, because the fans were there for it. People were jacked up. Obviously, you mentioned parents in the crowd. You had no reason to wither away in the manner in which they did.
Well, fans are ready for that. They were even booing Bo, as in like, hey, we're getting into this game. You
know,
Horvat's coming back to town. You know, like, and I don't. It wasn't in this like mean spirited way. It's just like, hey, he's in a different
playful,
team.
Yep.
You know, it's playful, but they're fired up. Lekker-Mackey scores, and just the crowd never fed off of it, right? And okay, you know, we're gonna be doing a lot of the negatives here, but on Lekker-Mackey, that goal. It's really too bad that it was this game you scored that goal in, because it kind of gets, you know, it gets overshadowed by how poor the performance was. But that goal was everything, you know, we've come to expect and want to see from Lekker-Mackey at the NHL level, and he gets his first goal, and it's just a great finish.
Yeah, it started off by Quinn Hughes as well, winning the puck battle, getting to Hronek, and then, you know, JT Miller doing what he does best, going attacking the middle of the ice and drawing a little bit of attention. But, you know, that conversation that you guys had with JT, and the fact that him and Lekker-Mackey have been talking and, like, each, you know, doing each other's tendencies, where it's just eating a little bit of pressure, and you know Lekker-Mackey's thinking, this guy's going to pass it to me. He's ready for that puck.
Yeah.
And just watching those replays, that quick release, it's tough to handle, right? Where he winds up with that one, 94 miles per hour, excellent. And that's the one-shot scoring ability that is so difficult to find in this league. There's very few players, and the Canucks have a couple of guys that are capable of that. JT's capable of it. Elias Pettersson, Brock has been showing that. But to add this guy when Brock gets injured, that showed you that, all right, he's got it. Now you just got to set him up. He's going to be able to make his shot, create his own shot to a certain point, but if you play next to a skilled playmaker like JT, he's going to get his look. So that was a fantastic shot by him, quick release, and you'll want to see more of that. Unfortunately, it just kind of stopped there. There was no zone time after that.
Yeah, he had another nice shot later in the game. Again, another quick release that he kind of
fell over. It was actually some really nice feet by him.
On the third period, he had a rush up the left
wing. Right.
And the puck's on his back, and he quickly puts it to the forehand and gets a
really solid shot. Yeah, he got that off real quick,
And so it's another eye-opener. But that goal, if the draft process and the 2 years to get to this stage here was the trailer, then that was the blockbuster movie release. That's huge, massive summer, right? That's what Canucks fans have been waiting for, and they were paid off in a big way. Now you can start envisioning, all right, like, where does it actually fit? Is it a player that can play on the flank of a power play? Can he go in the bumper in the spot? And, you know, given how quick that release looks, suddenly your just imagination starts to spark. Can the power play run from the other side? It really was encouraging.
And you know what I like about his game, where if you put him next to any playmaker, like I'm even envisioning him with a Connor Garland, he's going to score. He's going to the ability for Connor Garland to find those backhand passes or find that spot. There is versatility there. When you're a one-shot scorer like that, you put him next to a quality playmaker, he's going to finish his chances. So there is some, maybe early on you want to put him next to JT to say, hey, this is the leader on the team. He's going to be able to take those tough matchups. He'll help you out a little bit defensively. But down the road, yeah, there's some versatility there.
And also, it's not as if he's just camping out in the neutral zone waiting for that chance. That whole play starts. It's not him that makes a play, but he's in the right spot to clean up a loose puck after Hughes denies the zone entry, and Hrona kicks up to Miller, and then there's Lekkomäki joining the play, outflanking Mayfield and getting that shot off.
Even late in this game, guys, I know the score was kind of out of hand at that point, but there's a forecheck early in the third period. It was 3-1, and Lekkomäki once again just, you know, attacking Pulock and making that creating that turnover that – he sent a pass to the front of the net. It was a little aerial, and Elias Pettersson couldn't get a stick on it. But that's another example of if you're able to get zone time, if you're able to, you know, get this guy in zone, he can win some battles against some pretty good players.
Yeah, he really can. And, you know, and I think that pretty much sums up the positive for the night. It's the one Lekkomäki. There's really nothing. There's nobody else I'm going to single out tonight and say this player played well. And even Lekkomäki had the penalty, had a couple moments too, but he's a young player trying to figure it out. But fantastic moment scoring the goal. But that pretty much sums up the one thing tonight.
There were moments in this game where you're saying, okay, whether it was a save by Lankinen, I believe in the second period where it was on Brock Nelson,
right,
and you're saying, okay, save and transition. If this game turns, that's going to be a key moment.
Well, and also there was that save he made in the third when it was 3-1. I forget who it was he made the save on. It was also a big save on a bit of a 2-on-1 rush chance. Fantastic stuff from him. But they never woke anybody up,
But that's a key, though. Even the Vinny Deharnay fight against Matt Martin, you know, this is one of the all-time heavies in NHL history. Matt Martin is a guy that has a reputation. We know that here in Vancouver. Remember his exchange with Eric Goodbranson a number of years ago. A guy, you know, is taking on one of the ultimate heavies. That can get a bench up, too. That can get them going, and it just didn't happen. There was a couple of moments in this game where you're looking for that spark, and unfortunately, that urgency didn't come until way late in the game. By then, it was done and dusted.
Is there an answer for this, though? That's the other thing, outside of just internally doing it and just recognizing the moment, or at least
so
doing your job at the very least. Like, so, it's dreadful that it's happened 3 times here in 2 weeks.
So Gurnur from Surrey says, no energy tonight. They gave up after Lekkomäki scored. Somebody else said, and I'm sorry if I can't, don't attribute it to you, but they ask, is the Tocchet bump wearing off, you know, with, you know, all the stuff going on with the team, with some of these lackluster efforts? Are we witnessing the end of the Tocchet bumps? Bill from Red Deer texts in, and others are asking about Rick Tocchet and whether he managed the game well enough or not. We talk about preparation. 4 games, right? Being ready to go. The Canucks have given up the first goal. What is it?
It was
8 of the last 9 games.
Tonight, Lekkomäki gets the first one.
They scored the first goal, actually, but it didn't quite work out. But 8 out of the last 9, they give up the first goal. They've talked about having bad starts. This was something that plagued the team in the past, and it came down to a couple coaches saying it comes down to self-preparation, the players. Tocchet got them on board to do it again. It's way too early to me to pin this on the head coach and say, you know, his message is wearing off. But the lack of preparation, whether it's the individual players or how they're being prepared, has been notable for the home games, and it is a problem. Like, this cannot continue. Again, I understand you have a decent record still. It's early in the season. Everything is fine. But you can't have these performances in front of your home fans. You really can't.
Yeah, and the coaches mentioned that as well, where they gotta sort that out. They got to figure that out. You get the first goal, but it's that kind of those lapses, right? Over a couple of minutes where you allow a couple of goals, and that happened in the second period again today, where you can't have that moment. Where I think the Canucks last year were really good at resetting within game, where they're in a position right. to say, hey, all right, we had a bad shift. We allowed a goal against that was not great, or a sequence, but you're able to, within from shift to shift, turn that tide. We haven't necessarily seen that here this season. So it's game, 15 just wrapped up. It's still early, but you have to start building those habits now. You have to build that resiliency in-game, which this team had last year. They were able to do that. And, you know, I remember talking to Tyler Myers about that and saying, hey, it's not something you can plan. It's something that you have to kind of – it's in your DNA, but you have to work on it. You have to build it. And it just seems like right now they don't have that right now. Maybe that's from a position of confidence too, right? You're maybe not confident moving the puck out of your own zone. How many times did we see just trying to get it out, trying to release some sort of pressure? Mm-hmm. Guys, that's not from a position of confidence. And if you're eating pressure over and over again, at some point you're going to break. And we saw that a couple of times tonight, and we saw it on against Edmonton multiple times.
Yeah, and certainly against New Jersey in that game as well, where it was 6-0. You know, as far as the talk at management stuff, Jamie and I chatted about this in the second intermission, and you know, we had multiple texts coming in about, hey, should have taken a timeout at some point. And you know, Jamie made the point, and it's an excellent one, just given the context of Rick Tocchet, is generally speaking, he likes to let the players solve it, right?
Yeah.
That's fair enough. And you know, I do think the usage of timeouts can be a bit overstated, but nevertheless, outlier situations do present themselves. And I felt today was an outlier situation. But okay, if your philosophy is don't call timeouts and don't call timeouts, down 3-0 or down 3 goals with 3 minutes to go, now you call a timeout?
Yeah.
Your opportunity to do it, to actually manufacture a change in the game, was far earlier. And so that's the thing. If you don't call a timeout, maybe it doesn't get brought up and we can have a different conversation and say, hey, they're sticking to the philosophy. You broke the philosophy late there. It's 3 goals down.
Yeah.
Your opportunity to, at least, again, I'm not big fan of like barking at the guys, but this is now 3 times on home ice here in 2 weeks. If ever was there a moment to manage the game and say, what's going on here? We need to wake up. You're not doing it for the 18,000 people in the building.
It's passive game management.
Sure, but there's moments when you can inject your own situation.
Yeah, I'm not.
Well, let's go back on Saturday night.
Passive.
Let's go back to Saturday night. Chris Knobloch is, you know, 3-2 Edmonton, starting to reel in that game a little bit, and he takes the time out there, and they got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on that team, right? I'm sure the players can solve the situation too, but kind of reading the situation, saying, hey, my players need to take a deep breath here, and it worked out for them. They got a little lucky on that, the timing of the period, but yeah, I think it's something we haven't seen from this coach. And it feels like right now, maybe not last year, but right now, the team is needing that in moments. Last year, maybe there was a different kind of mentality. As the season went on, they grew into it. They're not there right now, and maybe that's where you're trying to build, but as of right now, they don't have it.
And again, I want the players to be accountable, and players can solve the problems themselves, absolutely. But in the context of this game and what's happened here in the last 2 weeks, that felt like an abdication of responsibility. That's just like, oh, it's always on you guys.
In a game like this, too, again, you know, somebody texted in and said, I'm going to rip into your boy Rick Tocchet tonight. What's going on with the offense? Like, there's a few blowout games for other teams. We're not bad. We're not only bad defensively, but offensively, too. Is this defensive system taken away from the offense? Please debate. And we'll end on that. I still don't – like. The reason why I don't think he's trying to preach this whole dump and chase thing, because every time we talk to him, he always says he wants less of that. He wants the guys to handle the puck better. He wants them to connect plays better. He wants them to beat pressure with pressure. And he actually doesn't want them to do the flip, you know, just the dump and chase all the time. Now, there's time and place. Depending on who you go up against, you have to dump it in and chase it. You can't just try to walk a puck into the offensive zone all the time. Teams play you through neutral zone tough. So there's a different game plan for every team. But he always talks about beating pressure with pressure and making plays with the puck and not just dumping it out. So I don't think that's what he wants them to do. But at some point, you have to get through to them to get them to play your system. And I also think it hasn't been the theme throughout the season. It's been a theme in some games, and that's what's made it so frustrating, because we've seen them look good and we've seen them look bad, and it's just such a stark contrast between the two Canucks we're seeing in any given game.
And that's the challenge here, right? Because you go back to that record, it's 8-4-3. They're still, I don't know what their points percentage in the Pacific is as of right now, but Edmonton won today, so there might be a little bit of movement in the standings. But the fact of the matter is, you're still happy with the start of the season. Now, when you talk about the system and the way that they want to play, I'm at every single practice, guys. They want the puck on the stick. They don't, you know, the relieving the pressure is not something that you necessarily want to do.
Thanks, Randy. We go to the podium, presented by Tiletown. Here's Rick Tocchet.
guys played light tonight. I thought we were ready to go. We weren't. It's on me. I got to get this team to play harder in the first period. Spurts here and there, but not enough from a lot of guys. So got to go practice tomorrow and go right back to the drawing board. So that's really what it is. So don't ask me about individual players. I'm not going to answer that. You guys saw it, so thanks.
Why did you think the neutral zone was such a struggle for your group as a whole tonight?
Didn't move our feet. We talked about hitting the weak side. We didn't. We were jamming pucks. Forwards were skating backwards instead of knifing through. It's not the defense of the forwards. It's a collection of five.
You touched
and
on
that. I give Niners credit. They played a great, well-coached team tonight. And, Patrick coached me tonight.
You touch on the home ice record. Is there a different feel around the group and the approach to games at home as opposed to the road this year?
I don't know. I have no idea. That's the answer. We have to change pregame skates. We got to do something different because we cannot play light. We're too light of a team. You cannot guess where the puck goes. You don't have to kill people. You don't have to ram guys through the boards. Even though every once in a while I wouldn't mind it, I'd rather a guy just stay in front of a guy. That's your man. We're just spinning off people and. Or not front. There's too many goal like scramble goals. It's just it's got to stop. So that's really what it comes down to.
You guys opened with a goal on a rush.
Yeah,
everything you wanted. Did the Islanders change something after that? Did they defend it differently?
No, they double and triple up quick, right? So you got to be ready for it, and you got to be able to get out of it quick, whether it's a pass or skate out of it. When you're slow, and you're playing light, they're going to own the boards. They're a big team. And I'm not sure that's why we were shy. I don't know. We were just shy tonight. And we're guessing where the puck is. It just drives me nuts when F1 guesses where the puck is. Your job is to go through a guy, or it's at least mark him. And we're coming off him. We're going to the next guy. And they're popping it to the guy that you just went. It's just, it's a frustrating situation because the fans are, 200, 300, 400, 500 bucks is ticket. And we're throwing some duds at. And so I apologize to the fans again. We got to correct this.
You mentioned the coach on the other side. You and Patrick obviously would have gone to war many times during your playing days. Do you have like a specific Patrick Waugh memory from your playing days?
I was assistant coach when I was Colorado. He was the goalie there. He's just a fiery guy. We had a leadership meeting one time, and the coaches were involved in it. And he was great. Like, he's not afraid to call his teammates. We were struggling. He called his teammates out, but in a good way, right? So, that's Patrick, very fiery guy.
Did you think, Rick, with the circumstances tonight, Dakota coming back from cancer and 2 minutes in, Lekkomäki gets his first goal, you think this would be a night where the team would look inspired?
Yeah, I thought the morning skate was the game plan was there, and then I just – after the first, and I'm talking to Footy, why are we playing so light tonight? And we did it against Edmonton, and I don't know what we're doing at home. Obviously, we're 6-0 on the road, or whatever our record is. Playing a simpler game, stick to the game. I don't know, but we just have some guys that are just really playing light, and we got to correct it very quickly because you play like that, you could lose 6, 7, 8 in a row.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. For vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. He starts it off by apologizing to the fans and mentions fans pay $400-$500 per ticket, and this is the performance that we have in front of him. I apologize to the fans. And he took responsibility. He said, Patrick outcoached me tonight. The coach was accountable. The coach apologized to the fans. And I do think in a game like this, when the Canucks have been this poor in front of their home fans, and again, the record is fine on the season. It's not like they're sunk their campaign with these home losses. But fans pay a lot of money to come watch these games. And fans want to see fans should be treated to a good effort. I can understand a one-off game, and they happen,
sure.
Right? But there's been like three objectively bad performances, and they've been getting increasingly worse, right? The Edmonton game was bad, obviously. The Devils game was deplorable. And this one was probably the worst one, considering, as the stakes.
I think considering we've seen it in quick succession here, it might make it the worst one. The Devils one was shocking.
I was, but I will say the first like period, not much happened. It was the one goal. Yeah. There was kind of like it was a grudge match. Not much was going on. Yeah. You weren't out of it. This one was like they were nowhere near it.
Yeah, they had six shots in two periods tonight.
It was nowhere near it.
The thing is too, it's because it's happening so frequently. That's the bit where and Rick Tocchet again referenced so many times. You know, guys playing light, not moving their feet, on, and you know didn't really have an answer why this is happening on home ice, and obviously the apology to the fans, but. The reason it's so alarming is obviously there's expectations coming into the season, but the lack of recognition that this is happening, that three times here in 2 weeks,
yeah,
this has now happened. You shouldn't have an excuse. You shouldn't have an excuse to not move your feet. You should know that you got to do that.
That you got to non-negotiable.
Repay the effort. In front of the fans that are showing up here every night.
And honestly, Bick, I think it's actually kind of insulting to be like, well, at least play well for the fans. You should play well to begin with. It's extra bad. I'm not trying to come down on you. I'm just saying, like, we're sitting here talking about we should play good for your fans. I mean, your responsibility is to play hard.
But
it's extra so when you're in front of your home fans, the people that cheer for you, that wear your jerseys and show up and spend their hard-earned money, their time, their passion, and you can't be repaying them with performances like this.
Beyond the fans' expectations, though, their internal expectations.
100%.
You're meant to go challenge for the highest honors this season. The misrecognition of what this is about and saying, yeah, we're okay, that eventually we'll figure it out. These games are stacking up really fast. Yeah. And if you think, you know, someone else is going to solve the problem for you, it's like, oh, well, you know, on a night maybe Myers does it or maybe Garland does it and I don't have to do it, whatever it is. You're in control of your effort. You're in control of your response to what's happening to these two games that are now going to three games. And Rick Tocchet mentioned it. Hey, we got to correct it quickly. You can lose 6, 7, 8 in a row playing like that.
Well,
you've already had
–
the alarm clock has already gone off once. It's already gone off twice. This isn't your iPhone where you can set an alarm at 4:30, 4:35, 4:40. It's already buzzing.
They're at the – you know how if you have to wake up at 4 a.m., you set like four alarms in case you sleep in? They're on the fourth alarm now.
Easily.
And they're still sleeping.
No, they're late, man. They've missed the flight. It is –
yeah,
dreadful timing. And if they think that they're, you know, they're just magically going to solve it outside of hard work, both away from a game and during the game, then they're living in a fantasy land. And again, fans would excuse and understand if this happens once every 2 months, right? It would be understandable. But the alarm that they're having right now and the questions that they're having are 100% valid. And we'll register them throughout the course of the night, but they are absolutely on point to be bewildered on what's happening right now.
Yeah, 100%. All right, we are going to get to your reaction on the text inbox, Dunbar Lumber, 650-650, and also on the phone board, 604-280-0650, your toll-free 1-888-275-0650. More of your reaction is coming up on the other side. As the Canuck Central post-game show rolls on, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment, be a champion on the worksite. Find them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next after a 5-2 home loss against the Islanders on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Perrone, drink wide pass left wing for Lekkomäki. He in stride into the Islander zone, took a quick shot from a tough angle, backhand to forehand, and Varlamov fought it off his glove hand. Horvat back the other way for the Islanders, carries into the Vancouver zone, driving to the net, backhand pass in front, they score! Anders Lee all alone in front, beats Kevin Lankinen and sticks side off the setup from the former Canuck captain, Bo Horvat, and it's 4-1 New York.
We were just shy tonight, and we're guessing where the puck is. It just drives me nuts when F1 guesses where the puck is. Your job is to go through a guy, or at least mark him. And we're coming off him. We're going to the next guy, and they're popping it to the guy that you just went. It's just, you know, it's a frustrating situation because the fans are, what is it, $200, $300, $400, $500 ticket, and we're throwing some duds at. And so I apologize to the fans again, but we got to correct this.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet apologetic to the fans who come to the game, spend their time and money, and have had some bad performances. This one tops it up. A 5-2 loss against the Islanders, who were on their third game in four nights against a more rested Canucks team. But the Canucks certainly the team that was off the pace this evening. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll also take your phone calls, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Now, Bick, before we go to the phone boards, what are the people saying on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650? I mean, the anger is palpable. I can feel my laptop heating up looking at the text inbox.
No, he's got an old model. This one, at the game tonight, first game I ever had to leave early because I was so disappointed, and I was even at the 6-0 Devils loss, too. This one, move your feet is stuff you learn in minor hockey. The pros can't figure this one out. Cole and Poco, championship teams don't start games like that, and championship teams definitely don't finish like that. 650, 650. This one, I was making wisecracks with my friends on our hockey chat. Oh, guys, I didn't realize how bad we were playing until I noticed I was watching in double speed. That is Rafe texting. And seems like a me move to watch things in double speed.
Yeah, I don't know. You're just a sicko. I don't know how you do all that.
And finally, that one. This one's – I like the apology to the fans. Classy guy, especially with the wild ticket prices. He may be right that they have not just been coming out hard enough and can fix that. 650, 650.
Yeah, you know, this text just came in and others but it's poignant, and I think a lot of people have been asking the same thing. Does this team rely too much on Quinn Hughes? He was the worst on the team tonight, according to the scorecard. Is it a coincidence that we played like that? I don't think it's a coincidence when your best players aren't your best players. I don't know if tonight's a night where it validates the concerns about quote-unquote the defense and being overly reliant on Quinn Hughes, because there was just like it was like a no-show, Bick, right? Like this kind of was a no-show performance. And I can't really name anybody that had a good game on Lekkomäki scored. He's a rookie. I mean, him, I guess, had a couple chances. He's working. He's doing his thing. I mean, I think he's just too eager to play that,
sure,
you know, like whatever.
He's still in adrenaline mode.
Yeah, I know. I saw people texting in. Poured out Bernie Sanders was like, I thought Pedersen was the best player tonight. I mean, sure, but I don't know if that matters.
It's relative to scale.
Yeah, but again, I don't think I can sit here and say, oh, this guy was good, that guy was good, or at least they had these guys going. So I'm not even sure tonight is a game we can sit down and say, well, this showed these specific flaws, because nobody – this was a complete lackluster team effort top to bottom.
Yeah, and you know he mentioned too, Rick Tocchet, that you know he was out coached tonight by Patrick Waugh,
yeah.
And you know we're sitting here chatting about you know motivation and you know what can Rick Tocchet do. I made a joke in the second intermission that it was like it doesn't matter if you got Vince Lombardi, Scotty Bowman, and Phil Jackson, you can have the best tacticians in the world, and you can get out coached. But if the guys aren't skating, it doesn't really matter. If they're not even executing simple stuff like moving your feet, it doesn't matter like how you're getting out coached.
Exactly. Or it doesn't matter that, you know, you have some flaws on your back. And he talks about the F1. You're not hitting a body. You're not getting on the forecheck. You're shying. He essentially said they were soft tonight.
Yeah.
He said they're light. They didn't want to fight hard enough.
He's been breaking out the synonyms on the in the
He's doing his best not to say something inflammatory, but at the same time be critical, and I think that was pretty evident there.
When you're openly acknowledging the ticket prices in your post-game press conference, something has gone really wrong.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It really has. All right, let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Langley, where we have Lee on the line. Lee, thanks for calling in, pal. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, guys. Man, that was a tough watch. Mm-hmm. How is it that on a 100-point projected team, 100-plus point protected team, that our rookie of two games, he's the second game, he was probably our best two players tonight. At first I was going to say, oh, PD played well. No, PD didn't play well for the first two periods. He was invisible first two periods, just like the rest of the team. I'm so tired of these just pathetic and soft efforts at home in front of probably the most passionate fan base in the league. People pay $200 for tickets. They have 10 to 15 Canucks radio shows and podcasts. How the players know that we are passionate. They heard us in the playoffs, and they give us efforts like that. Mm-hmm. It's just unexcusable. Like, we have, like, lofty goals of trying to win a cup this year. Maybe even just a deep playoff run. But, like, the goals that we are giving up, there's no boxing out by our defenders. There's no back check. every puck battle was lost today. There was no forecheck either. Like, I just don't understand. It's like the message not coming through from Tocchet. I feel like it's too early to block out his voice. He's only been a coach for a year and a bit. Like, it's just unexcusable, and the team is playing so soft.
I hear you. Hey, Lee, thanks for the phone call, man. I understand your frustrations here. And I think that's pretty much sums up, like, you know, how a lot of fans feel about the lack of overall effort in a game like this.
Yeah, I'll dismiss the idea that they've tuned him out. I'd be stunned if something like that has happened. But
I can understand. But here's the thing, though, Bick. Like, when you see a coach get tuned out, they play like this. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I'm not saying,
fair enough.
It's more correlation, not causation. I completely agree. Like, again, like, I'm a Rick Tocchet guy. You know how Rick Tocchet says, I'm with this guy. I like Rick Tocchet. I think he's the right coach. Like, I'm a big fan of Rick Tocchet. But I can understand. Yeah, but he took accountability. And when you have performances like this, everybody has to hear it. You know, everybody has to take it. So I understand it's being pointed out. I don't agree with it. I don't think that's the case. But, you know, what do we say for teams that don't listen to their coaches? It's these types of performances. And, again, I don't think that's the case. But I can excuse fans who are frustrated for kind of wondering if that's the case here tonight.
He has mildly acknowledged the fact a couple of times now that – hey, we had a game plan. They didn't follow it.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight, again, not moving the feet in the neutral zone, all that sort of stuff. But he said, we talked about hitting the weak side through the neutral zone. They didn't do it. Islanders played great tonight, and Patrick outcoached me. And he mentioned a couple of things, but in the previous games, too, he's mentioned, like, hey, we gave him the blueprint, the Carolina game. They didn't follow it. So was it some freelancing? I would say, particularly in the first two periods, it felt like a lot of individualism trying to create any sort of scoring chances. And the third period, look, I know they launched 20 shots, and some of it looked far more linked up between players. You know, there was sequences of passes and actually getting shots off later on. But it did feel like a lot of individual puck carrying, which was stunning because the goal came off of a quick play there, JT Miller feeding Jonathan Lekkomäki for his first NHL goal, and it was just a make the play, bang, bang. First two periods felt a far departure from what they should look like.
Yeah, absolutely did, and in a massive, massive way. Keep getting your thoughts into our text inbox, 650-650. This one here says, Jason and Langley, when will the talk lose its cool on the bench? The apology is appreciated, but enough is enough already. What we're seeing on home ice is hot garbage. Chef Alvin, no more reheated pasta. Please serve us another dish. That's Jason from Langley texting in.
I do wonder, given how bad these performances have been stacking up now, if a little bit of a shakeup comes onto the forefront here. I know we've chatted a lot about.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, this stuff can't last.
No, I get it. I think the thing is, you're so limited because you're trying to accrue cap space and you're trying to build towards something down the road. Is it so acute right now that you have to forego all that to make a move? If they were worse in the standings, I would maybe entertain that a bit more. But because, again, like,
but
their record is fine.
I'm not even saying something high level to be like, oh, go get the third line center you want to go get. Like, but if it's just the idea of, like, oh, man, they'll move some guys out here.
But who's the guy?
I'm not saying I have an answer for it.
I just
don't
know if we're there.
They do love to be the wild card in the NHL trade market, and they just do something for the sake of doing it because this can't continue.
Yeah. Mike in Surrey texts in and says, the talent is not there. After Hughes, it's not a playoff team when he's not on the ice. Defense is nowhere near good enough. They're missing Lindholm. I said keep him over DeBrusk. Always centers over wingers. Crazy. And, you know, the Canucks tried to keep Lindholm. They offered him 7x7. Should they offered more? I mean, that's, you know, up to anybody. You can have that opinion. But they offered Lindholm significantly more money than he gave DeBrusk, and ultimately he decided to take a bit more and go to the Boston Bruins. But yeah, you know, man, that's a take a lot of people have, and it's not unfair when you look at how the team has started off, or at least played some of these games on home ice. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to more of those as the show goes on here, but let's go back to the phone boards, and let's go to Port Alberni, where we have Aiden on the line. Aiden, thanks for calling in. Now, what are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, boys. Yeah, rocky game, right? Like, you don't want to see that at home. But, like, you know what? It happens. Dakota Joshua is back, ladies and gentlemen. I am pumped up. I was so happy to see him return to the lineup today. I was like, yes, he's back. So that is good news. I am happy about that. But, yeah, you never want to see a loss at home, right? Like, what was it, like 5 shots in 2 periods? Like, come on. That's insane. But, like, you know what? There's some positives. We got the Beast back. So, you know, I don't know. It's a bright future for these Canucks, right? Playoff run last year. They went far. Like, they got Edmonton until 7 games.
That's the past, though. Aiden, that's the past. You're talking about bright future. That's the past.
Well, bright future behind, you know, it all leads up to the present. Where, you know what, I'm looking forward to another playoff run. I got hope in these guys, and I see another bright playoff pitcher this year. It's a rough start to the homestand, but you know, we got this. We're good. We're coming on a winning streak. I can feel it.
I love it. Hey, Aiden, thanks for the phone call. Aiden's got heart, man. Still got some heart. He's still, you know, he's got the belief that they're. I mean,
which is good. Like, we'll all wake up tomorrow and people will be like, all right, on to the next one, right? You got to get ready and certainly finish this homestand, which is going to improve with some competition by the end of it with the New York Rangers.
Well, you hope so.
You know, suddenly a game against Chicago, which shouldn't have so much weight to it, but again, you have to re-engineer a bounce-back game all of a sudden.
Well, like right now, having 19 points in 15 games, like they're on pace for over 100. Like again, like the record is fine. There's nothing wrong with the record.
But
right
the roller coaster shouldn't dip all
the
time.
That's the thing. And like the coach mentioned, it's the second time he's mentioned this. If we don't rectify our game, we're going to lose 4, 5, 6 in a row. Like, that's been mentioned before. We talked about that, you know, I can't remember. I mean, there's been some bad performances now that I can't remember which one specifically he was talked about. But it was after one of the games, and I think it was
– I feel like it was the Carolina one.
Yeah, I think it was something along those lines. But anyways, they found a way to play better. But those are pretty big warning signs being mentioned. So the record looks fine now, but if you actually get into a rut and you start stringing losses together, that's going to evaporate quickly. So they're not at a point now where panic needs to come in, right? Like, they're – the hopes for the playoffs are already dashed and that they're not going to be a good team necessarily by the end of the season. But there are some concerning signs, and these, again, the performances on home ice have been utterly unacceptable so far. What else are you seeing on the text inbox, Bick?
650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Newest Nick, when will this team realize you have to play a full 60 minutes at home to consistently win? So some pride and urgency. It's becoming embarrassing. What are they going to do when they come up to play good teams? That one is unsigned. 650. Ken in Coquitlam saw too much of Miller 3 years ago. His attitude and mood affected the team. He's a leader, needs to show it more. PD had an okay game and worked. Huggy was just okay. That's all coming into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Can we play this from JT?
Yeah.
All right.
Do we have this clip?
I believe we do. I believe Eddie's fast at work here.
So JT Miller joined you and Jamie Dodd after the first period.
And we thought, you know, he assisted on the kid's first NHL goal. What a cool moment for him. And, yeah, he talked about, you know, assisting on that play. But then we asked, okay, 3 shots through the first period. What do you got to do the rest of the 40 minutes? And here's what JT said.
Well, we don't have any urgency right now. I don't know what the excuse is. So we need to I don't know. We talk about it too much, I feel like, right now. So we need to find a way to be urgent and dictate the game. And I don't know. It's just not enough going through people and kind of loose.
Not enough going through people and kind of loose. The coach mentioned they weren't going through people. The F1 wasn't going through guys. And that was 1-1 after the first period.
That was 1-1. You just had a cool moment assisting on that guy's first NHL goal.
They had 3 shots on goal.
And they had 3 shots on goal. But that's in-game recognition. And you just look. We love doing the in-game walk-offs with players, but you know, players are very, I don't say coached up, but very familiar how to evade the answers, right? And can give stock answers. That's not a stock answer. Yeah. That's a dude saying, how is this happening all over again? Didn't have the answer for it. Didn't show it the rest of the way.
Well, I mean, Tuch didn't have the answers either. He's like, I don't know. Like, he said, I don't know a lot. And he kind of like, he had that exasperation.
And honestly, that's not a bad answer because you're being paid to put out an effort. If it doesn't happen, it's like, I don't know what's supposed to happen. If I sat here, sat and just stared at you silently while you're like, hey, Bick, what's happening in the inbox? And I just shut my mouth. And tomorrow someone asks you, like, hey, what happened to Bick on the show? You'd be like, I don't know. He's paid to talk. I don't know what he did.
He just went mute. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Did Lena turn his mic off? No, she did a great job. Yeah. Joey does a great job. Bick just decided not to talk. You would be so confused.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
No, it's
three games on home ice. They're just like, nah, you know what? Just didn't skate.
Yeah.
Just didn't skate.
And again, it's one of those things where it's not an indictment on the entire campaign, but it's the home record, and it's the efforts on home ice. And people always talk about this. It's like, if you're going to have duds, have them on the road. The odd one on home ice is fine, but you have to treat your home fans with a lot more respect. And if you feel like you don't have the energy, sure, but like you guys, I thought, you know, Ada made a good point, and I think, you know, somebody else brought it up too, that people saw all the players loved the reaction by the fans in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like the energy they got, how special it was, they got emotional from the fans. Well, if they matter so much to you, you got to be better than this. You really have to. And if you want high standards, you want this fan base at home ice to be behind you and cheer you on and to be like that, you have to give them reasons to cheer you on and believe in you. And when fans are saying, I spent all that money but I left early for the first time, that's not good. That's really not good. You want fans to be able to stick through and watch games start to finish? Well, you got to give them a reason to do so, and that hasn't happened enough on home ice so far this season.
650-650, Alistair in Victoria says, Canucks have 2 wins against teams currently in the top 10, 5 wins against teams in the bottom 10. I can't believe in a team that only gets their wins against bottom feeders. This one, it's like you guys have just met the Canucks. They're unmotivated, bunch of underachievers. They are boring. And Kobe in New West says, fans should stop showing up to games until Vancouver gets their act together. We as fans paying way too much to watch this many brutal performances.
Yeah. Dave from the Valley says, the core feeds off each other and they crumble when the going gets tough. The D needs major help. We'll win against the Hawks and get crushed against another quote-unquote good team. Dave from the Valley texting in. So tonight, the New York Islanders coming to this game were outside the playoffs. They won this game and got into a wild card spot. This wasn't a playoff team. The Canucks have a better special team. It's been better 5-on-5. The only edge you can say the Islanders have had over the Canucks coming into this game tonight, and they've had injuries too. Vancouver's had
theirs.
They were
a playoff team last year. But yeah,
I'm just saying, as in so far this year, playoff team. Yeah, wild card team. How good were they anyways? I mean, they're a playoff team, quote unquote. Yeah, you're right. But I'm saying, like, I don't point at this team like, oh, here's a good team that can beat. You know what I mean? Like this, which is even worse, right? It's even worse. It's not even like this good team that came in and beat you. It's like this team that's very mid, really, right? And the goaltending's been one good thing that they've had so far, 5-on-5, but it was their backup playing, Varlamov, because Sorokin's been fantastic. The Canucks had all the edges coming into this game, and they played like they had none of the edges, and I think that's a very disappointing way to go about the performance here tonight. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line as well, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We got a lot of takes on this and comments on the hit that Quinn Hughes took from Maxim Siplikov. It was it at the end of the first period? It was late in the first period where he got hit, I believe it was.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think it was the first period. And, you know, fans are talking about a response. Should there have been a response? We'll talk about that. And we'll get to more of your reaction. Plus, we'll hear from Canucks players after a tough 5-2 loss on home ice against the Islanders. And you are listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Palmieri onto the puck, left corner for Brock Nelson, rims it around to the right side for Grant Hutton off the bench, tried a low shot, blocked off a skating run to the near side and held in by Chalosky, left point. Comes around to Hutton again on the right wing, centering pass in front, and they score! Holmstrom threw it to the net. Lankinen made the initial save, and Engvall digs home the rebound. The Islanders score twice in the first 2 minutes and 10 seconds of the second period to take a 3-1 lead.
And the Islanders have jumped on the Canucks here early in this period as Holmstrom gets the opportunity first in the slot. That puck doesn't go through, but Pierre Engvall hanging around to the left of Kevin Lankinen picks up this rebound and slots it home. Just a lot of puck watching for the Canucks as four Canucks were in front of Lankinen. Nobody was able to get the puck carrier. Nobody was able to get the rebound. And Engvall, the only Islander in that area, ends up scoring.
Islanders defeat the Canucks 5-2 at Rogers Arena. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Vic Nazar on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Keep getting your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Jay and Burnaby text in and says, where is Luke Shen to call out guys on the ice when you need him? So Jay and Burnaby is longing for the leadership of Luke Shenbeck. I mean, go on. Any more text? Yeah. You know, never enough minutes. I'm just. Yeah. Do you have a take on it? You're allowed to have a take.
Yeah, good take. Good take. Wayne and Edmonton, the boys seem to find new ways to disappoint. Whatever happened to play for the other guys in the room? Dak's return, Johnny's first NHL goal, just a sad, passionless effort. Coming in from Wayne in Edmonton. This one, most frustrating part of this Canucks team is they cannot put a consistent effort game to game. And then Dave, the City Worker, three of the last four home games, all losses, 6-0, 7-3, 5-2. Whatever magic this team had last year is dead and gone. That one is from Dave, the City Worker. Oh, actually, one last one.
All right.
Joe and Victoria, is the country club atmosphere back?
I mean, again, like, I'm not ready to give this exhaustive claim on the lack of, I guess, character. I would say on the team to think that they can't rectify this and that they can't be a good team, that they lost the spark and this is what they are. It's early in the season still. But if there are some concerning performances.
But if they keep showing it.
Yeah. It's like, if you keep showing it, it's like, if you keep showing me who you are, believe you. Believe me. Believe them. Right? And it's like, yeah, I'm not there. Again, it's early in the season.
There's another texter. Has anyone considered that maybe what you see is what we are, and there is no fixing that?
See, I think that's fair, and it could be, right? But we're 15 games in. What do we always talk about? It takes a good 20, 30 games just to kind of establish what you are, and then you got to build on that, and it takes well into the season, and teams evolve and get better, and we're so early in such an early stage of the season yet that so much more can happen and will happen, and we don't have a clear picture yet on what this team is going to be at the end, right? I still believe there's a lot to like about this team. But they got to start fixing this stuff on home ice. And I think all this criticism tonight, and, you know, we push back on criticism, individual players and things that are unfair, but I'm not sure there's anything unfair tonight. Because like I said, when you play like this in front of your fans, you have a lot of games like this, and it's not just one. It's three out of the last four on home ice, and there's just some bad performances. Those are the ones you kind of makes you wonder. It makes you wonder about the character, the passion, the coaching, your star players, the locker room. Because when you hear about things being wrong and awry, this is how teams play. This is how they perform. But because their record is still good, but because, you know, we're still early in the season, I'm not ready to say it's causation. But the correlation is there, Bick. And I can understand why fans are asking the question. I think they're completely within their rights to ask all these questions right now.
650, 650, Hannah, I can't tell if teams we play keep doing a great job of breaking up passing lanes or if the Canucks are making poor choices, but it's remarkable how quickly we lose possession sometimes. Good to see Pettersson with six shots. If I were trying to find a silver lining besides Lekkerimäki. And Pettersson ends up with 10 shot attempts, I believe. 6 plus 4. Yeah, there you go, 10. One was blocked, three missed the net. So, yeah, he leads the way in six shot attempts in a night of 18 minutes and 45 seconds and ends up even on the night as well. But as far as, you know, passing lanes, you know, tonight, they have done well some nights on leading the possession advantage, but they were desperately behind after 40 minutes. I'm not counting what happened in the third. They end up better. They have more offensive zone time, but it's all because what happened in the third period. The Islanders had just over 9 minutes, actually close to 10 minutes after 40 minutes of offensive zone possession time. Canucks had just over 6 minutes, and they end up with 14. So a lot of that comes in the final frame. But
yeah.
By and large, they were meek in their offensive creation.
Meek, yeah. I mean, that's one way to describe how listless the effort was offensively. Just
trying to find new
tonight.
Words for soft, like Rick talking.
Yeah, it's good. You're working the thesaurus hard here, Bick. It's good. I like it. Ginger Sov for Victoria says, obviously, the performances on home ice have not been good enough, but the only thing we can do as fans is show up to the games and be prepared to scream our heads off. Our guys need to be reminded of what this team means to us more than just criticism, and wants the fans to show the team the support. And okay, fair. You can have
you
that
know what,
take.
Though? There was a Connor Garland chant.
I think
I heard a Teddy Bluger chant tonight.
I agree. Here's the thing. I don't disagree with, like, hey, fans can always help out.
Of course.
And, like, you can lift the team. But these guys, trust me, man, we're at every single home game, and we've been talking about the fans here. They've been down. They keep cheering them on, and they have, man. But then there's some games where they're just out of it. And even though the fans have been cheering and trying to get them going, like, nothing kind of sparks the team. And because, again, like, it's not the easiest of times for everybody right now, right? Like, you know, some are doing better than others, but coming to a game is not necessarily easy. And I know that's not necessarily, you know, the team's problem, so to speak, like the economics of the world or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, like, when you come and spend money, you go somewhere, there's an expectation of you being met halfway. And yes, fans can always be supportive, but have the Canucks on home ice even met the fans halfway yet? I can't say they have. So no. I can't really be critical and say, well, fans should at least be there and stick through. Like, I can understand where it's at. And, you know, one game, sure, I can be like, hey, come on, guys. It's one game. We can all relax a little bit here. But it's not like they've been like this since game one. It's like, this is like building to the point where this exasperation is palpable in the building.
Now fans are going to show up with a guarded heart, which is the worst thing to do, you know. There's obviously apathy, which, you know, had set in years ago prior to Rutherford taking over here. And that's always a dangerous place to be. But having that, I don't know what's going to happen tonight, so I'm going to wait to cheer. If you give me something to cheer. The fans have been proactive over the last season and heading into this season. If they're showing up a little concerned and scared on Saturday, I mean, that's not good, but I would understand it.
Yeah, and what happens is you have the year you had. You have some fans that are returning and fans that are reinvigorated coming back and they're excited for the season. It's been, you know, a bit of a throat punch to a lot of fans coming to games, right? So I understand how they're feeling. Rafe says, last year at game 15, we were suppressing our excitement and enthusiasm. What are we suppressing this year? Your innermost fears?
That's what I do all my day-to-day. I don't want to do that at work.
Work is a safe space. It's so true, Big. I can barely sleep when I get home, but I love being at work.
This is my sanctuary. I don't need this to be the place where I harbor my fears.
You're going to get too personal all of a sudden.
We do call this the therapy session sometimes. Yeah,
sometimes it's for us more than anything else, believe me. It's a distraction. It's the best distraction I have. All right. Is there something else you want to hit on the text inbox before we get to how these goals came to be?
I'm going to blindly text in my problems to see if I can get it worked out. 650 from B in Coquitlam.
B in Coquitlam.
650. Defense absolutely hung Lankin and out to dry. D pairs need some serious adjustments or an upgrade through trade, and Desharnais needs to sit. A lot of Hronek criticisms as well. We'll go through some of the goals here in a second. Nemo, Hronek contract will age so bad. Jacob from the Bay, Hronek has not been criticized enough. Him being beat has led to goals in multiple games now. The man was facing the net in one of the goals. I expect that for myself in beer league, not a guy getting paid over $7 million a year. Also, I don't know what happened to Susie from last year when he was in the lineup. It was like we couldn't lose. He has looked absolutely cooked this year. Alvin needs to get on the phone for a real top four D-man like yesterday. I'm partial to the one that scored the empty netter tonight. Well, no Dobson. I mean, that's going to be a tough acquisition. But nevertheless, yeah. Good shout in the inbox here. Some of the defending today. Susie and Hronek, understandably in the fans' crosshairs tonight.
For sure.
There was multiple moments. Like, Susie got sat for, I want to say, 5 minutes in the second period.
Well, it's rough.
He didn't even go out even for the penalty kill. It was,
I think Brad's
it was 4 minutes and change. Quinn Hughes killed a penalty tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
That never happens. Quinn Hughes went out for a penalty. And, yeah, I think Brännström
had 7 seconds. He had one. She had, like, at the end of a shift, I think, towards the end of one. That was it. But, yeah, I mean, Hughes spent a minute.
It was
17.
22 seconds for Brännström on the penalty kill tonight.
22. Right, I'm looking at the first. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
it was 22 seconds.
The second period score sheet.
So, yeah, and Hughes had, what, nearly 2 minutes on the PK tonight? 133.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know.
And, okay, so I wanted to bring this up, too, because we've mentioned the should we go through the goals now?
Yes, let's go through the goals. Okay. Let's do it. Let's start off. And you know what? There is, I mean, I don't want to call it the rose that grew through the concrete in a night like this tonight. But, I mean, the one moment, it was a nice moment. It was a special moment, right? Like, fans have been so jacked up.
Yeah.
And here's, like, here's the thing, too. Like, you have this moment where Lekkomäki scores early in the game and the fans explode.
It's not even a consolation goal or anything.
No, it's like 1-0. Yeah. And it's like excitement, fans, and you know, we're like, man, look at that finish by Lekkomäki. Yeah.
Not a cheap goal. It was an awesome – it was exactly what we want from that player.
And exactly how you want to start the game. The Canucks have given up the first goal 8 games in a row. They score the first goal here tonight. Lekkomäki scores, JT with a nice play over to him. You're like, man, like, all right, this could be a fun one. And that was the highlight of the night. It really was. But let's talk about how Lekkomäki gets his first goal of the season.
Yeah, Hughes has a nice play at the blue line on a entry that he denies. Hronek kicks up to Miller. And I love the way Lekkomäki attacks this, right? His body's open early. He peels away from Mayfield, who had also pinched inside to deal with Miller. And Miller feeds it, and he just 93.4 on the shot clock. Yeah. He absolutely destroys the pocket.
And the thing is, it wasn't even like, you know, a full windup either.
No.
Like, the amount of power he generates by just, like, you know, a half slap shot is really remarkable.
And it eats up Varlamov as well. It just kind of tucks inside the arm. And Canucks are up 1-0 early.
Yeah. And
again, it was from distance. It's not like he was working towards the net, too. He peeled away. It's at the top of the circles, just outside the edge of the faceoff dots. It was impressive shot.
Yeah, it really was. And that made it 1-0, and that's pretty much the highlight of the game for the Vancouver Canucks. And it wasn't like they were bad the rest of the period. There was a couple chances for the Islanders. They take a penalty and go on the PK, and you'd think one of the worst, second worst power play in the league this year, the New York Islanders. Canucks have the 9th-ranked PK coming into the game. This should be an advantage, right? The special teams should be an advantage for Vancouver. Well, the Islanders scored on their man advantage.
So this is what I wanted to talk about, because we've mentioned and talked about Eric Branstrom. Mm-hmm. And the like, how you build the blue line. And I've focused very much on, you need to find PKers.
Right.
So in this moment, it's Carson Soucy's penalty. So you're not using Quinn Hughes on the PK. You're not using Eric Branstrom on the PK. Carson Soucy's in the box. Mm-hmm. You have no left-handed D-men.
So you put two righties out there.
So you put two righties. And they've been doing that anyways, because it's been Hronek, Myers, Desharnais, who have been penalty killing a lot. So they've been using three. But right now, you aren't using any left-handed. And you watch this play. The way Hronek approaches cutting off the pass to, who was net front? Was it Wallstrom? It was Lee.
Lee.
It was Wallstrom who kicked it down to Lee. But Hronek just naturally puts a stick on the inside. There's nobody in the bumper.
Mm-hmm.
The Islanders are just five guys around the horn. There's no one in the bumper, but he's just naturally got a stick on the right side, and he realizes too late, okay, I've got to get it on this side. But it's just that natural ability of, hey, it would just be on my right hand, or it would just be on the right side where I need to protect the lane. And it's just an easy access to pass that down all the way to Lee, who just tucks it across, obviously, to Pageau. But it's just that moment you recognize, like, they really didn't have a lefty to put out there. Obviously, you want to limit Hughes' PK exposure, and Branstrom was the trust level to put him out there. But to me, that was noticeable, that if you want to build what the left side of the D looks like, one tough reality that might emerge is Eric Branstrom's PKing role.
Well, and we know they prioritize size, and we know they like to have big defenders on the PK. And tonight, Hughes played a minute and 30, but they don't want to use Hughes on the PK a ton. So if you're not using Hughes on the PK a ton, Soucy's struggling, Forbort's injured, and I've liked a lot of what I've seen from Branstrom, but that's why I'm very cautious when people ask, like, is he a solution? Is he going to be here not only the rest of this season, but long-term, or be a full-timer that can grow? I'm just skeptical, not because I don't think the player can be serviceable. He can be. He's done a really good job. I'm really impressed with what Branstrom has done. But you mentioned usage. You mentioned what the coaches want. I don't know if that's the profile they want.
His pathway might have to be on the other side.
But at the same time, they're...
How badly do you want to do that, right? It's not that he doesn't deserve praise. It's not that he's not played well. All these things are absolutely true. It's there are some issues that are going to crop up that have nothing to do with Eric Branstrom. It's just, how do you want to build the blue line? What roles make the most sense? How do you get the minutes out of the blue line in the right spots? And it just felt very noticeable to me on that goal. It was righty on the left side on the PK, and it was very preventable if you got the stick in the right lane.
Yeah, for sure. This one says, rough Novembers are nothing new. Just a reminder, we had a 5-2 loss against the Leafs, Flames, and Avs around the same time last season. Sure, but there was also a 6-0 loss. Edmonton put 7 goals up on them recently, and this was a 5-2 loss. Like, it's a bit worse than some of those performances, but that's how the game was made 1-1 at that point. Going into the second period, here's where the game completely unravels, and it happens really early in the first. I mean, right off the faceoff, the opening faceoff in the second period is essentially what leads to them getting into the zone and scoring their second goal of the game.
And Hughes just leaves a puck on the boards for Suter.
We talk about being connected.
Yeah.
That's not a connected play, man. That's really not a connected play.
It was easy. I think Horvat was even surprised. Like, I'm going to go get this puck? Awesome.
Well,
thanks.
I mean, honestly, like, Did he just like Bo? Like he just hey, Bo's there. Just throw it back, and you know what I mean. Like I don't know.
He saw Bo's face. He's like, oh, Bo will get this.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I mean, I'm kind of joking, but at the same time, not like Ratu was nowhere near it. Yeah. I don't know who's that
Suter,
on. Suter was nowhere near it. I'm not sure who that's on. Is that on Suter? Is that on Hughes? I mean, Hughes turns the puck over, but that makes it 2-1.
Yeah, he goes with Mayfield and he shoots. It goes off JT's stick. That was the shot was never going in, and then it just goes off JT's sticking in.
To me, the Engvall goal, the second one, to make it 3-1, that one was inexcusable. You don't protect the rail, you get running around,
you
next thing
you
know.
You don't do a bunch of stuff. Even in the offensive zone, you know, Isaiah George is essentially skating all the way back as Heinen's pressuring him on a regroup, and he just throws the brakes on, and Heinen goes right by him.
Yeah.
And up the wall, he sends it up, and Slipikov beats Susie to a puck, and then everything is just chaos after that. Sherwood thinks he's covering for him, and he goes deep, and he covers. Susie gets back, and Sherwood's in the bumper. They literally do 3 rim arounds.
Yeah, and they're just completely out of sorts.
Sherwood just vacates the rail, and there's that chance for Holmstrom, and it's a heavy shot inside the slot coming downhill, and it bounces perfectly for Engvall, who, you know, I'd have to rewatch this, but I feel like Susie, just given the way that play unfolded, he had him to the outside, and then he's got to connect to Holmstrom.
I think as soon as he saw Wahlstrom, he reacted because the rail wasn't protected. But nonetheless, I mean, it was a complete fire drill. And then it's made 4-1 by Anders Lee in the third period. And again, Bick, not protecting the guts of the ice here. Again.
Or even just getting on the right side up the ice. Hoglander gets on the wrong side of Horvat, and he just bursts past him. He flies by Queen Hughes and Hronek in the spot, looking the wrong way on a cross-ice pass right in front of Lankinen. Just dreadful.
Yeah, and Noah Dobson scored an empty netter. Not much to add to that one. His first of the season, been a tough start for him, but gets an empty netter for his first in the campaign. And then Tyler Myers gets a second goal for the Canucks late and just essentially scores off a winning faceoff. I mean, nice finish by him, but anything more to add off the faceoff win, and he kind of drives towards the end and scores, and that's pretty much it.
Good shot.
Good shot, I guess, for Tyler Myers, but not for the Canucks, losing 5-2 tonight against the New York Islanders. All right, we are going to get to more of your reaction on a text inbox and also on the phone boards. Plus, we'll hear from Canucks players postgame and from Ian McIntyre as the Canucks Central postgame show continues, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.
It's Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Mayfield ahead for Wahlstrom into the Vancouver zone. He's tied up by Hughes. Hronek gets the puck, passes to center for JT Miller. Miller with speed, high slot, Islanders zone, left circle. Lickermacki scores! A one-timer off the rush for Jonathan Lickermacki, and it's his first NHL goal. The Canucks lead 1-0.
Welcome to the NHL, Jonathan Lickermacki. 93 miles per hour on that shot. Scores off the rush, and an excellent job by the Canucks to attack through the neutral zone, and Lekkermäki like a pure sniper ready for that shot. JT Miller coming down the middle of the ice, nice little pass, lays it off for the rookie, and he does the rest, beating Semyon Varlamov.
The highlight of the night for the Vancouver Canucks, the kid, Jonathan Lekkermäki, scores his first goal in the National Hockey League. A great finish by the kid to make it 1-0, and that's as good as it got for the Canucks tonight. Go on to lose 5-2 on home ice against the New York Islanders, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, be a champion in the works out. Be a champion on the work site. Find them together online at dleamc.com.
You're shook.
Yeah, I am shook. I mean, it's about as good as it got. You know what I did?
Hey, why didn't you wear a maroon suit like Landon and Murph today?
Believe it or not, we don't coordinate what to wear.
I noticed Rachel didn't text in call in a compliment today because you weren't wearing a monochromatic suit with the others.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I dropped. I mean, you know, the Canucks performance was so ugly, nobody cared about the beauty they saw.
Hilarious.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I thought the suit looked good. It was sharp.
It was sharp. We were laughing in intermission.
It's like, what?
We finished and we looked up and you guys were on, and Jamie said, why is he wearing the same suit?
Well, yeah, I saw, somebody on Twitter mentioned, you put the tweet
out.
And somebody responded. I just want to make sure I got it right. It was Lotto, let me see here.
This is great radio.
Yeah, it's Canucks Fan Lotto 2024 said Sat just wanted the attention, I suppose. and here's a text, a tweet he sent us to Canucks Fan at Lotto Line 2024. And it's a quote from Michael Jordan. I can accept failure. Everyone fails at something, but I cannot accept not trying.
There you go.
Yeah. I think, you know.
And again,
good words.
From fans, fans would understand that.
Yeah.
Hey, honest efforts, lose 4-2, empty net goal, whatever.
You can lose 5-2 and play hard. And things like hockey, it happens. Things bounces don't go your way. You get tough luck. It's a tough game. You know, you can't always expect to win, even if you play great. Like, that's how hockey is, right? You lose games you deserve to win. Tonight was not one of those nights. You know, there wasn't a lot. You know, again, the only redeemable part of tonight's game to me was the Lekkomäki goal. And honestly, I thought – I know Lankinen's even getting some criticism, but I thought he made saves to keep them in it. I mean, if he doesn't make a number of high-level saves in the second and third, this game's out of hand. Like, we're not even talking about the Canucks sniffing somewhat of a chance in the third. I mean, it was a two-goal game, and in about 10 minutes, the Canucks were kind of – you know, you would expect. I mean, third game in four nights for
the
Islanders.
He made a great save on Brock Nelson at 3-1. He made a great save on Engvall at 3-1.
To me, those are the only two, because he gave you a chance tonight, considering how bad the Canucks were, and Lekkomäki.
He had too many men penalty. That was entirely avoidable.
Yeah, Hughes jumped on too soon on that one, too, and it's just like, come on.
Well, he jumps on because Joshua's going to get that puck in deep, and it gets knocked away at the blue line, and Brännström, instead of going to the bench, is like, all right, I'll just go pick this puck up.
Yeah, it's rough. This one from John from Squamish. Season ticket holder, some same seats every year in the offensive zone. I've never seen that many offensive zone turnovers. Take care of the puck, and in the second, a plethora of odd man rushes. Outrageous and uninspired, shaking my head. That is John from Squamish. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And honestly, like, usually we'll read text and be like, oh, okay, that's a little unfair. It's like, okay, it wasn't that bad. Okay, well, actually, it was actually like this, and, you know, that's... It's like, yeah, no, fair.
Context is not necessary tonight.
No, it's not. It's fair. All this stuff is fair. All right. Anything else you see on the text inbox before we get some player audio here?
This one. What do you think of the Höglander no goal? 650.
Okay.
I don't know. It looked inconclusive to me. I would prefer that one is ruled a goal and try to chalk it off. Because if the ref saw that go off the glove in real time, kudos. Because the ref has basically the same angle that the camera had. But
maybe he did. I don't know. But it was inconclusive, I think, based on the video.
That's how I feel. Yeah. But because it's ruled no goal on the ice, you're not going to flip it.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know if you can clearly and obviously tell.
To me, I think that there are too many goals get disallowed. This is a bigger thing as opposed to this specifically. Do I think that play should be disallowed, generally speaking? Like, I don't. I think plays like that.
If it does go off the glove, then it's obviously that shouldn't go in.
But I don't mind necessarily even allowing goals that go off the glove. Like, if you're holding the stick the way he's holding it, to me, that's not like you're using your hands. You know what I mean? You're holding the stick. You know, that's just my general.
You still can punch the puck while you're holding the stick.
Yeah, but you also do it. You're going to hit the stick when you do it. You know what I mean?
No, but if it goes off the glove.
I understand. I'm just saying in general, like, I can have a conversation about letting some of these goals go. If your hand is on the stick and that happens, whatever. But I don't have a problem with them disallowing it. If the call on the ice was no goal, the video to me was not conclusive enough to overturn that call.
Yeah.
So that's on that. All right, we have time for one more phone call here before we get to player audio, and it is John in Poco waiting on the line. John, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Well, you know, I guess the one thing I find this so frustrating is, like, at an NHL club at this level, to have five shots after two periods, it's just unacceptable. And I hearken back to the game seven of the second round against Edmonton, like four shots at the end of the first period, in a, you know, like a crucial do-or-die game. This team has to generate, you know, more chances. I've thought of one play in particular where, like, Garland breaks in, and then he does a toe drag and puts it right into the defense, and rather than just shooting it. And I think, you know, Sad, I think back to the Red Wings teams of the mid to late 90s, and they just, like, volume, like, they just shot from everywhere. And I know people say, oh, yeah, but what's it, a wasted shot? But no, there's never a wasted shot. The more shots you generate, you're going to get rebounds that could go to an on-rushing player. Like, this team has to adopt a high, just more shots on goal. It just is too often they don't even hit 30 shots. And I know teams defend different now, but I mean, you should still be able to generate 30-plus shots, almost not every game, but probably, you know, five out of every 10 games or eight games, you should be able to generate that many. And I think they're just doing themselves a disservice. Mm-hmm. Thanks, guys.
Hey, John, thanks for the phone call. And you know what? There are times I'm like, yeah, you know what? Like, you can. I'm not all about volume shooting, but I think he's bang on about tonight. How many times were there opportunities for shots that they didn't take? The one I think of most glaringly was the one Hoglander had, where he has the puck, like he's just off the slot towards the end, and he just kind of like holds on to the puck and just skates himself to the goal line.
Right.
And nothing happens. I'm like, you're right. Like, why aren't you just throwing it off the pad at the very least?
He also had a moment in the third period, and I get he was pressured a little bit by Dobson, but Ratu was streaking to the front of the net on an entry.
Yeah.
And it was just Dobson there, and Dobson chose to go after Hoglander, and he doesn't even attempt to pass.
And ends up kind of taking himself out of the play, too. Just kind of skates down the wing on that play, too. And I'm not trying to pick on Hoglander necessarily, but those are the ones that stand out to me to what John is saying. Like, there were times where it's like, you just got to shoot the puck, man. I don't know what you're doing. Like, there's no better play for you to make. You have to shoot the puck there. And they didn't do it. And there was countless situations throughout this game where the looks were there, and they just did not do it.
It's not even as if, like, we've seen nights where they've missed the net a bunch. Like, how often do we talk in the first four games of the season?
We talk about shot attempts all the time.
Quinn Hughes was getting 19 shots blocked through the first four games of the season. Yeah. It's, like, overwhelming. They weren't even getting attempts off early in this game. I'll bring it up here, but I believe they only had 7 attempts in the first period.
7 attempts?
7 shot attempts in the first period.
Attempts. Like, I don't know if people realize how low that is.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they actually got, three of those on goal is pretty remarkable.
They had 7. They had 7 in the first period, 13 in the second period. So they had 20 attempts on goal through the first two periods.
Yeah, I mean, they finished the third in all situations with 38 attempts, but, like, too little too late towards the end, right?
It's fake hockey at that stage.
Yeah, you had 20 attempts through the first two periods. Yeah, it's not great. It just really isn't. I mean, that's 6 total shots through 40 minutes, you know? It's just
like, a good night is, like, 65.
Mm-hmm. You got to be in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, a good night's like in the close to 70.
Yeah.
You know, you have a good night, but should be in the 60s. And again, a lot of that was volume towards the end where, you know, the game's kind of out of reach anyways at that point. All right. We mentioned some player audio post game. And as you can imagine, after another tough loss on home ice, the head coach, we played the audio. He was very, very frustrated and apologized to the fans, mentioned fans spent $200, $300, $400, $500 for tickets and apologized for their efforts and took accountability, saying he got out-coached tonight by the head coach of the New York Islanders, that is Patrick Roy. And some of the players that met with media tonight post-game included Quinn Hughes, the Canucks captain, and here he is post-game talking about what happened tonight.
I mean, I try to pride myself on staying even keel. If we won 7-1 tonight, I'm not going to be thinking we did anything special, but obviously frustrated.
What have been the struggle to get some offense tonight, Quinn?
Why was the struggle?
Why do you think they had their way with you now?
We just probably didn't stick to what makes us successful. A freaking arm cramp.
Thoughts on Dakota Joshua getting back into the lineup tonight?
Happy to see him. Obviously, it means a lot to our group, and just probably the bright spot if there's one tonight.
The home record, Quinn, is that something you guys think about, or is it just kind of an oddity this year that you guys haven't really had that many good performances in home ice?
I mean, just obviously not playing too well last couple games, and try not to focus on home or away. Just look at every game as a new night and try to play our best, and obviously we didn't do that tonight.
I guess the other bright spot was Karamaki's first career goal.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. He's going to have a long career in first and many.
That is Canucks captain Quinn Hughes after the game. And I think it was one of those, like, I'm just going to try to stay even keeled and not. He says that. He's trying his best.
Plus, apparently had an arm cramp.
So he's just like, he's working through a cramp as he's doing the player interview. And, you know, we mentioned a bit earlier about the Siplikov hit on Quinn Hughes. Was it the first period? Mm-hmm. I think it was the first period, yeah. It was an open ice hit. Now, the hit to me was clean. It's fine. It was a clean hit. But it's the captain of your team who got blown up. I understand fans want a response. And Desharnais goes after Siplikov. Desharnais says, hey, you know, Siplikov doesn't want to fight him, and he kind of lets it go. But he does go after him, right? And then later on in the game, Desharnais ends up fighting Matt Martin. But it's something that left a sour taste in a lot of fans' mouth. And Lucas texts in about this and says, regarding the hit on Hughes, I was at the end of the arena. Desharnais stepped up immediately and tried to fight him, but the Islander player backed down, Siplikov. Should Desharnais have jumped him anyway and taken the instigator penalty to show him unity and get the bench fans going? Yes, absolutely. His fight with Martin was a little too late. Too late. If you are going to fight, I don't disagree. Like, in that situation, with how listless the Canucks had kind of looked and how the game had gone, would I have minded if Desharnais had just dropped the gloves? And even if it's, you know, you don't have to, like, knock the guy out, but just do something. Take 2 minutes, I don't care. I don't mind seeing that in a game like this. Do I think this means it's open season on Canucks players? I'm not necessarily sure, but Besser got hit, of course, and we talked about that. It was Tanner Jeannot, and we spoke to Landon and even Yannick Hansen about this, getting their take, and they kind of mentioned that, you know, Jeannot's probably going to take care of business against anybody on the ice there. You got to be careful, but, you know, they took care of the game and all that. This one here, open ice, your team doesn't have a lot of energy. I don't think it's unfair to ask that or expect that the players should have had more of a response emotionally.
Yeah, I mean, it's a clean hit.
I get it, but it's the captain of your team. I get it.
The game.
But if that's the case, why is he even reacting? You know what I mean? Like, you reacted, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's...
I'm okay with either outcome here. Yeah. If it's a dirty one, jump in, man, every single time. The clean ones, I want to see game flow. I want to see the game continue. There's a way to have some retribution later on. Like, you can find Slipikov's number and wait for a moment. I get it.
But that also, yeah.
But also, you know, you cannot skate yourself into a guy and get hit, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's also a thing.
Hey, fair enough. But I understand a game like this tonight, and fans have a lot of concerns and frustrations, and that was one of them after the Siplikov hit on Quinn Hughes. All right, it's time for that portion of the show where we hand it over to the man we call the closer, the man who is about to drop his knowledge on us as the triple threat. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
Fans are upset that Desharnais didn't just drop his gloves and take a suspension on Siplikov.
More or less. Or at least, like, you know, rough him up a little bit more. Something.
Every clean hit needs a response, apparently.
But I get, like, in a game like this,
that really
this, dude,
wasn't even much of a hit. And Quinn deserved to be hit in that case.
He skated right into it.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I think it's one of those nights where it was such a poor performance that all these little things are so triggering to fans right now. I can understand where the frustration comes. And we heard the head coach tonight post-game, you know, he starts it off by apologizing to the fans for these performances. He takes accountability, says he was out-coached by Patrick Roy here tonight too. And, you know, we got a lot of reaction from fans. A lot of fans have been here tonight, and, you know, they're not happy with, you know, coming to a game. And they've only won 2 games on home ice. 3 of the last 4 on home ice have been really bad performances. You can understand why there was some angst by the hometown crowd.
Yeah, it's my experience. Here's some knowledge I'm going to share with you now, because I know that you're waiting for me to drop knowledge on you. It's my experience.
Can we get, like, an angelic
exactly.
drop behind you?
I don't know. I don't know what kind of what's intellect music or background noise. I've never had
Albert
it, so
Einstein
I don't
listen to it at
so,
the patent office.
Exactly. Probably wasn't Beastie Boys, but
probably some, like, classical music or something.
Yeah,
Vivaldi.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I pictured the Tweety guy. No, I was gonna. I'm so far down a one-way road now. I was gonna mention there was a show called Masterpiece Theater when I was young. It was on PBS, and there was a Tweety guy sitting in front of a fire, and it had some classical music, which wasn't even good classical music. It was like classical muzak.
Oh, yeah,
for the
TV elevator show. Music.
But that's what I'm hearing in the background now as I say this. It's my experience in many years of covering hockey that when the coach comes out and before he takes a question says, I'm going to make a statement, things have gone terribly wrong.
Yes, they have.
For that to happen. I could be mistaken. You know, on deadline, I didn't have time to go look it up. I think Rick did this once before after a game where he just sort of made a statement about how poor his team was. But, I mean, this is a thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the numbers so often, You know, you isolate them, and you know, it's analytics. They're just numbers, right? But you can't separate the numbers at home from the emotional and financial investment that you have from people at home. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, you can't say, oh, well, we're this at home, but we're this on the road. Isn't that great? And we're 8-4-3 overall. Yes, but you've won 2 out of 8 home games. And on nights like tonight, you have not entertained anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody who was, well, maybe with her coming to see Bo.
Yeah.
They're probably entertained.
Or if you got here on time and saw Lekkomäki score a goal, and that was a highlight of it.
Yeah.
Of it.
That's pretty much even, it. But even then, it's just going to be this footnote in his, I remember when he scored his goal. And by the way, that was a terrible night, but I remember he scored his first goal. It's an entertainment business, and you have to entertain. And I think one of the hallmarks of the Rick Tocchet teams that we've seen in the last two years yet?
It's January 24th. It's a third season because it was part of one season.
Doesn't it feel longer than that? Like, I was going to say 2.5 years. It's only not even coming up on two.
But well, his first year, that felt like an eternity that season.
But what we've seen, whether they win or they're not, is they give him everything. Like, the team competes. And on nights like tonight, it's not competing.
Yeah.
And I know they want to compete. I know they want to win. That's one thing about this group. They're driven, but their execution at home has been so dismal in some of these games. I said to somebody before Tocchet said that, before we even went in the room, I was saying to somebody, imagine if this was the one game a year you came to, and you bought 4 tickets, and you paid for parking, and your home team has 6 shots through 2 periods. And actually, just for the heck of it, I actually went down the NHL play-by-play to track these shots.
There and it wasn't, makes it even worse.
There wasn't one from inside 20 feet.
Yeah.
And in that first period, after the Lekkomäki goal, they had 2 shots. One was from center ice, by Pettersson. The other was from the Canucks' blue line.
By Hronek.
And they found there were 3 shots in the second period, and that period was worse. And I didn't think they could possibly be worse as a team than they were in the first, but that was their worst period of the season, that middle period. So I can understand Tocchet.
Yeah.
And his frustrations. Look, I would even say if you had a whole season like this where you were the best team in the NHL on the road, and not only was your home record one of the poorest, but you had games where fans were leaving feeling like they didn't get entertained, there'd be calls for the coach.
Yeah.
Even with the overall record, because the home games are so important in this industry, in any in any fan-based enterprise. You have to have effort, and you have to do your best to repay the financial and emotional investment that home fans give you. I've said many times, we have such this great, at times volcanic market, but it's so broad, and there's so many subcultures within Canucks Nation. It's fascinating. But I've said before, the most important segment of that big swirling mass are the people who give their money to the team to come and watch games. And tonight, nobody would have gone home feeling like they got their money's worth.
Aside from the effort, which is its own subcategory of how bad things have been.
You know what? I just want to say it's not even effort, although that's part of it. It's just it's execution.
Okay,
it's like
that's literally what I was going to lead to.
Okay.
Because now this is, you know, if it happens once, it's an oddity, but if it starts happening multiple times, it becomes the trend. Rick Tocchet has mentioned multiple times that we gave them the game plan. We gave them details of things to look out for. Carolina, right, they had the issues there. And he mentioned tonight, like, weak side through the neutral zone. And they're not executing on things that – and he's referencing it. It's like the game plan isn't being executed. Is that cause for alarm outside of the execution as well?
Yeah, I mean, alarm is a big word 15 games into the season. But these are recurring problems. Mm-hmm. So that is – disconcerting, and disconcerting is probably not strong enough.
The writer at the right time.
Somewhere between those two. What surprises me about it, again, if you think about the culture that has quickly been built here since Tockett came in, Tockett and Adam Foote and that staff, but also management and the job that Patrick Alvin has done in reshaping this roster. And obviously putting his stamp on it. Look at all the new players here from the end of last season. But this was a team that didn't compound mistakes, right? The bad game, they'd bounce back. Even bad period, they'd bounce back. Mm-hmm. Even within shifts, you make the one bad mistake, and this was something that Tockett talked about early on. Let's not make the second mistake.
Yeah.
Let's not make the third. And now in these games at home, that have gotten away from them, we're just seeing the mistakes stack upon each other. You have a humongous pile of mistakes by the end of the game, and they're not bouncing back. They're not correcting themselves mid-game. In fact, it's going the other way, and that's something that I don't think we've seen before this phenomenon, if we call it that. Hopefully it's a phenomenon.
Is phenomenon not bigger than alarm, though?
No, they're two completely different things. Phenomenon is describing a situation.
It's the magnitude of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, magnitude's a good word.
Yeah, it is, right? And I think, like, it's one of those nights, Ian, where, you know, we oftentimes get criticism in the text inbox, and, you know, fans are passionate.
Really?
Yeah, you're right. It's like, fans are passionate. And we'll be like, okay, well, you're right about this, but on this, you know, like, let's be fair. There wasn't any of that tonight. Hey, let's be fair about this. This happened. Well, actually that. Like, outside of Lekkerimäki, who scored, and Lankinen doing his best to keep the team in it, like, there was nothing tonight you can point to and say, well, there was this, there was that, you know. And I think that's a tough, you mentioned a tough loss to take. It's also like, there's nothing you can cling to after a game. Be like, well, at least this is something we can look at, because it was just two individuals, and one's a rookie, and one is a goalie who did what he could for like 45 minutes.
Yeah. God, I hate the what can we build on questions. I roll my eyes at that post game when.
Yeah.
Well, what can you take away from this game? Well, we lost.
It's cope. That's all it is, right?
I'm not saying there were any tonight. I'm just saying generally, like, when things are really bad and people try to find something to hold on to. You know, people, what did Tockett say tonight post game at one point that you guys saw it?
Yeah.
Everybody saw it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a very smart hockey market as far as what the team is doing. It has too much alarm in it at times, most of the time, in fact. But, you know, people understand when the team has played well and when it hasn't. They understand guys like who put in an effort. So Elias Pettersson, Elias Pettersson. Did I say that right?
Elias Pettersson, yeah. That's close.
I'm not sure I got it right.
He says it with the Swedish.
John Shorthouse sent me a note, a correction, because I've been saying it wrong since he got here. And Early on, I even said to Elias, we'll call him Elias for now. Elias, am I saying this right? And he said, Elias. I said, Elias. Okay.
So you're putting a double E rather than inflecting on the I.
Well, Shorty, his phonics on it was Elias. Elias.
Yeah.
Elias. Like, so I'm emphasizing the Lee, but I'm saying I instead of ah. And I'm not trying to distract from our conversation. So anyways, but I do have a way of getting back to my train of thought.
It's the weave.
So
I like how you say it's one-way traffic, and then you're the only one creating the road here.
Oh, my goodness. Someday somebody's going to compare me to Trump, and it'll be over. That'll be the end of it.
I mean,
oh, my goodness. I'll have to retire. But Pettersson in the third period, the shorthanded shift, you know, where he dug the puck out and he hit somebody and he kept it going. You know, he got a cheer for that.
Yeah.
Because people understand.
There was effort.
That's how the guys should be playing. And so, you know, the fact that nobody's, you know, texting or calling in to, did you take calls?
We did. We had a couple people. Somebody just texted in on the bright side. Pedersen looked good tonight. I mean, that's, you know.
I mean, he's competing.
Yeah.
He's engaged.
Yes.
So at least that part was consistent. Hey, that's what we can build on for next game.
There we go. Here's a silver lining.
Yeah. Elias Pedersen, and I think I said it right that time.
That's good.
Elias Pedersen.
I like it.
Said, I don't know what he said. No, I lost my train of thought. No, that really is getting Trumpian, isn't it? Okay, we're going to listen to music for the next 41 minutes.
Yeah, we'll finish this off now. But
play Pavarotti really loudly. I'll sing along.
So Ave Maria?
So before we get out then, are we at a point now where...
Trying to end the show already.
Well,
no,
I mean,
it's,
you know,
time. It's time.
By the time
and
we
I
get
got
through,
and I kind of got here on time tonight.
You did. It's good. But also, like, you know, by the time you finish answering the question, you know, we'll get to the end of it. So... Is there a time for a more drastic measure? Because we haven't seen from the coach, like we've seen him, you know, demote guys a little bit, but we haven't seen like a jaw-dropping healthy scratch, for instance. Like we haven't seen anything that's been earth-shattering in that sense. Or are we getting closer to something that's going to like perk or, you know, make us go, oh, wow, I can't believe he did that?
I don't think we've even seen a benching.
No, not really.
I mean, to a key player. I mean, I'm not talking about Susie missing a PK shift.
His first year, remember that game against Seattle? I think he benched JT for like 9 minutes or something. And he spoke, but he's like, I apologize. Yeah. JT apologized to me. We both had a heart and heart. That's the only one I could think of where he benched JT.
And it really wasn't even that much.
It was like five minutes at the end of a second.
I think he kept him off a power play.
Yeah, and he took those 5 minutes, kept him off the power play, and then got him back in.
So, yeah, I think, I mean, by the sound of it, Rick Tocchet is concerned about what he has witnessed. And so, yes, things ratchet up. And I go back to something he told me back in Penticton about, you know, he's going to be a harder coach this year, right? Because they want another level. And so mistakes that maybe, because you can't be on players all the time, I'm paraphrasing here, things that you would have let go, maybe you don't let go anymore. You don't let them slide anymore. Doesn't sound like he's in any mood to let things slide. So, you know, how that manifests itself and whether it's, you know, air quotes, drastic, I don't know. I know there's going to be some pretty tough conversations tomorrow that we're not privy to before practice when they talk about, they typically go over video and do a bit of a post-mortem and talk about things. I don't think that's going to be very pleasant for some players tomorrow, but you know, what comes beyond that, I don't know. I mean, you know, what looks like drastic to you, Sat? Like, what would you?
To me, drastic would be benching somebody we wouldn't expect. Yeah. I'm not even – honestly, I have to go through the game again to look at and say, okay, who's the one guy you'd look at?
So Quinn was poor tonight.
But you're not benching him.
By Quinn's standard. But you're probably not, although you could have sat him a shift.
Or something.
After the first goal in the third period. I just don't – you know, it sounds great.
Yeah, and I know exactly.
In practice,
100%.
But, like, you're still trying to win games.
Because I don't think a Nils Höglander scratch is going to do anything.
No, and that's the thing. Like, it's always comical that when a team has a terrible game, usually the guy who pays for it is the fourth line winger. He's coming out. The guy who played
it's a
8 minutes.
Feeble message.
The guy who played 8 minutes is coming out of the lineup because we're not going to stand for this anymore. And meanwhile, everyone who plays 20 is still in. But the reality is, this is. You know how your team is constructed and how you have to be successful. You have these stars, and I would say, in fairness, especially now that Elias is
very good.
Look at that,
very good.
Play is coming.
You made
back.
More adjustments tonight than the coach and the players did.
Since his play's come, there really isn't any of their key players that you look at and just say, "Well, this guy's really struggling." I mean, we know that JT's playing through something, and he seems to be running a little hot and cold these days. But, you know, Quinn Hughes has been one of the best players in the league this season, and for most of these games has been even better, in my opinion, than he was when he won the Norris Trophy. Roenick has been good. You'd like to see him get a little more offense, but you don't, you know, you're not going to bench a defenseman because he's not scoring enough.
He played 27 minutes tonight, too.
Yeah, and then, you know, Garland's been one of their best players. They do miss Besser because he and Garland were probably their two best forwards this season, and Brock is out. But there, you know, there's not a whole lot you can do there. I think maybe you change the messaging. Maybe you even change some of the things you're asking them to do on the ice. We know that there was a lot of time invested by this staff in the off season in preparation for this season and at training camp to change the way they play and try and get them to be more aggressive and more attacking off the rush. Maybe you have to pull that back somewhat. Although I don't, you know,
tonight,
were they aggressive? That's not the problem.
Was they were losing the center or middle of
the
ice.
No, but they're when he talks about guys spinning away, and not. I think that's all wrapped into, like, guys are trying to think, okay, I got to go. I got to get my feet moving. And sometimes you just got to stop.
Yeah.
You got to stop in the right place and get in front of somebody and make it harder for them. You know, they always talk about, you know, you got to play through people. At least make them play through you if they want to score.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're not going to play through him, make him play through you so that there's not a free pass to the slot and that all these guys – you know, poaching for rebounds and loose pucks. They're not doing it unfettered.
Just really quickly on the idea of, you know, Rick Tocchet not letting things slide.
You know, I've kind of controlled the show here.
Which is exactly what we want.
I think Sat checked out 7 minutes ago.
We're exhausted by this.
Bick and I are going to midnight.
Could you have called
like, I need to get home.
I know he famously
You know what?
Like
I actually thought of that. I actually thought they were so poor, especially when they give up the two goals early in the second.
Yeah.
If you're ever going to use it, that would be when.
Because he used it down 3 goals with 3 minutes left, with 3 minutes to go. And I know he doesn't like using timeouts, but if there's ever a moment, 3 games on home ice, you're probably thinking, all these people have paid all this money for it. That was probably a moment.
Well, especially when we saw that it worked for in Edmonton's favor 2 games ago. But I think at that point, you know, they have been very good with their challenges generally, and you don't want to shoot that arrow before you have to, right? To use a timeout.
I don't think
they
change the
rule
anymore. Yeah,
you get a penalized.
Well, okay,
but also
but you're
worried about the next goal against,
yeah,
to not use your timeout rather than energizing your guys to get the next goal for,
yeah,
that feels flawed to me.
Yeah, I mean, they gave up a power play goal in the first. When it's suddenly 3-1, I can see why he doesn't want to give them another power play. So,
yeah. All right.
Thank you for the correction. Yeah. You're right.
That brings us to the end of the show.
So I'm 1-1. I got Elias right.
Hey, you know what? Closed.
You're trying to end the show now?
Oh, yeah. We got to go at this point. But, Ian, fantastic stuff as always. I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca, which is going to be an interesting read, as it always is. So make sure to check that out. And we'll chat with you coming up on Saturday evening after the Canucks play the Chicago Blackhawks and hopefully a better home game for that one.
I don't think it could be as poor as this one, but, you know, it's their first back-to-back games. That in itself is a challenge, too.
It is, absolutely. Bick, you're back at the People Show tomorrow, so look forward to Bick 6, what picks you have for week 11 of the NFL
season?
Week
11. Guys, name and dudes, Lucky Whitehead will join the show from the Bombers, setting up the Grey Cup at 3:10, and our usual Friday hijinks.
Good stuff. It's Satyar Shah. I'll be back with Canuck Central tomorrow. Yannick Hansen, plus the Friday mailbag. Special thanks to Lena and Eddie back at studio. Fantastic work from you guys, as always, and all of you for listening, participating, being part of the show. We appreciate it very much, as always. You've been listening to the Canuck Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. And before we leave you, here is a quick Dakota Joshua post game. Have a good evening.
Yeah, we just weren't on the same page tonight. Yeah, it was nice to be back out there. I mean, there were a few moments, but we need to be better. Yeah, we just we weren't clicking tonight. We didn't have it.